This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 150,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/bookhype.
Welcome to Book Hype, episode number 60. I'm Karen, and today I'm joined by Marima and Kristen, and we're going to be discussing The Blood of Olympus. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hi.
It's been a while since I've done one of these. See if I can remember how it works.
Well, first off, let's talk about what we've been reading. Do you want to go first?
Sure. I had approximately one day off in the last month, and I managed to pack in a few things. So I read All the Bright Places by Jennifer Niven/Niven. This was the one I was telling you about with all the post-it notes in it, and it was really cool. And it was really sad, and I may have cried. I would not admit to that, but that may have been a thing that happened. So I definitely recommend it. The post-it notes make sense to me now that I have read the book. But I'm not going to explain the thing because it's a kind of a spoiler. And then I also read My True Love Gave to Me, which is the anthology of holiday romance stories that Stephanie Perkins edited, which was pretty cute. It's a pretty solid anthology, actually, like overall pretty well-rounded. It was nice to see that it wasn't all like contemporary, whatever, YA. There was some fantasy in there. There was some sci-fi. So, you know, it had a bit of a mix, and they weren't all romances as such. So that was nice as well. And then at the moment I'm reading the third installment of Stephen Fry's autobiography, and this one is called More Fool Me. So I'm about halfway through that. It's pretty good. I don't know if I like it as much as the first two, but we'll see. It's sort of meandering along. I will report back when I have finished.
The third installment, is that usual to have multiple installments for?
Well, yeah, some people write like more than one because, you know, they'll write one and then it'll be like another 10 years and they'll write about kind of the years since that. He hasn't done that so much as he has just broken up his life into different sections. So like his first one was about school and I think like Cambridge, maybe that was in the second one. And yeah, the first one was about, you know, his family and all of that. The second one was about like his school life and starting out in the business and working with Hugh Laurie and things like that. And then this one is more about his drug addiction and how that affected his life and all of that, which is just some things that he left out of the other two, I guess. So, because the other two did not come out like that long ago. It's been a little while, but it's not uncommon. The way that he has broken it up is more uncommon than like the fact of there being more than one autobiography.
Okay, interesting. I had never heard of like multiple ones before. I assumed people just waited until like all the interesting things in their life happened and then they're like, yeah, I'm kind of done. So let's just write this up. But that's cool.
Yep.
Kristen, what about you?
Well, this week I started and finished White Hot Kiss by Jennifer Armentrout. It's the first book in that series, and the second one comes out Tuesday, so I was like desperate to finish it, and it was really great and really fun. It's kind of a bit of a supernatural romance. Like, it has the romance angle, but it's more grounded in like demons and these guardian creatures. It's really cool. I really, really liked it, and I'm looking forward to the sequel. And then I started just like 2 days ago or yesterday, I don't know, Me and Earl and the Dying Girl by Jesse Andrews. I had stumbled across it at like a Books a Million or something, and I read like the very, very beginning of it, and it was written in such a different way, and it was really cool. So I was like, okay, I have to read this. So that's what I'm currently working on and eagerly awaiting Jennifer's next one, and Rowdy by Jay Crownover, which I also am obsessed with that series. So that comes out like maybe not this week, but next week. So it's a busy month. I love it.
Cool. Yeah, lots of books coming out this month. Lots of big ones, it seems like. This week, all I read was Blood of Olympus by Rick Riordan, because I had to, and also because I really wanted to. But yeah, I haven't had time to read anything else. Hopefully, after the next few days, things will calm down, and I will have a little more time because there are lots of awesome books waiting on my shelf that I can't wait to read. But until then, let's jump into Book Bites. This is something I just kind of came up with off the top of my head because of the whole Percy Jackson and Olympians versus Heroes of Olympus series. So I wanted to know how you guys felt about spin-off series. Do you like to continue reading about characters from the same universe, or would you rather an author do something different?
For me, I am of the opinion that like a character's story is never really complete. Like I understand when authors don't want to revisit a character because they don't want to torture them anymore. I've seen authors say that a lot, and I always respect that. But as far as I'm concerned, like you're a person and your life doesn't end just because this story is done, so that character will continue existing in that world. So I'm always happy to revisit someone I've met before, someone I've known before. So I'm perfectly fine with spin-off series. But I also really enjoy when they take a series from a different angle, like when you go from a different character's perspective or something similar, like in the same universe, but slightly different. I always think that's cool too.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's on a case by case basis. In general, like I feel fine about spin-off series. I actually quite like the idea of spin-off in general, taking a character that maybe was underappreciated and fleshing out their life and, like Kristen said, coming at it from a different perspective. Sometimes these series can offer, I'm just thinking in the case of like YA, the main one would be the Vampire Academy Bloodlines series, because Bloodlines was a spin-off. And I would say that series is more mature than the Vampire Academy. So, like, that's a good example of a spin-off done well because it offers the reader something new. But I don't know. I think personally, I'm more of a fan of the crossover versus a spin-off. So, like, when they interact, but it's not necessarily like taking one character from a series and branching off with them, if that makes sense.
Okay, kind of like what Stephanie Perkins did,
Yeah,
where, I
exactly.
mean, I guess, are those considered the same series, or are they more like individual books that are just crossovers?
No, that's the same series, but you would call them like companion books or crossover books, not like spin-offs as
Yeah.
such.
I kind
Although,
of.
I mean, theoretically, Isla is kind of a spin-off for Josh of Anna and the French Kiss, now that I
True.
think about it.
I think that it's on a case-by-case basis too, because, I mean, if you think about Percy Jackson and the Olympians versus Heroes of Olympus, yes, it's a spin-off series, but it also still has Percy featured heavily in it. But the thing is that it's so different because you have this whole other component with the Romans in Heroes of Olympus. And I think that's sort of key to making a good spin-off series, because there are series out there that are spin-off of the originals, and they're basically just the same thing rehashed because the author knows that it's a good formula and that people are going to read it because they like the originals. And I think if you're really heavily invested in a story, then that's probably okay as long as the books are actually good. But for me, I really like seeing spin-offs that have something of the original that I'm already invested in, so that I'll, immediately be invested in the spin-off, yet they do something different, so it doesn't just feel like the same thing over again.
Yeah, I think the most dangerous thing is when you feel like an author is just repeating it out of, I wouldn't want to say like lazy. No, I'm going to say laziness or to make money because they know that the fans are already invested. Like, to play devil's advocate, that would be an argument one could make about Rick Riordan, because he kind of repeats the same formula with these different series. I don't necessarily believe that, but like that's the kind of thing where it can become a little worrying. If, you know, if he was to do another series that sort of followed the same thing, because they all kind of follow the same formula. So when you feel like that with a spin-off with an author, then even though you may already have that investment with those characters, I feel like you're not going to read it because you're going to resent the author, you know, trying to get more money out of you. Or like Kristen said, sometimes you feel like the characters are living on, you know, outside of the book. And sometimes that's enough and you don't need to know exactly what happened to them all. I don't know. Maybe I'm the minority there that doesn't need to know like exactly what's going on with every single character. I feel like a lot of people enjoy knowing that.
It's not really a book example, but like the Hangover movies drove me crazy because the first one and the second one were like the exact same structure. So you knew what was coming next in the second one. And it felt like it felt like a ripoff. You know, you felt like you were being cheated.
Right.
That would bother me a lot. But if there's anything new, which I would imagine an author who's taking the time to really like craft these books, I would hope that they would want to be adding something to the world rather than just, you know, rehashing and all of that. So I see what you mean, though. If it was just a rehashing of what they've done before, that would feel really cheap.
Yeah, and I can't really give any examples because, like, I don't want to, you know, point out anyone that I feel like has done that. But, you know, just as a general, like, phenomenon, I feel like that is the biggest danger with a spinoff.
Yeah, or even, like you were saying with Rick Riordan's books, I feel like a lot of fans don't want to read these mythological books. They want him to do something different. But for me, and I don't know if this is just me kind of like, you know, turning a blind eye to it, but I really love what he's doing. And even though the structure is fairly similar, I mean, there are some differences like between the Kane Chronicles and the Percy Jackson series, and even between Percy Jackson, the Olympians, and Heroes of Olympus, there's some subtle differences that make it, you know, unique to one or the other. But I feel like he does such a good job with these things that I'm super excited for the Norse Myth series, even though I know it's going to be basically the same type of story, but it's in those minor differences that I just get really excited about it.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Do you guys have any awesome spinoff books that you do like reading? I mean, we mentioned
Vampire Academy.
Vampire Academy, thank you. Any others?
Now I can't think of anything.
Yeah, me neither. Go figure. All I can think of are like the anthology series, like you were kind of talking about that. I guess crossover is the word you used or whatever, that it just kind of links to each other. I've read a lot of books that kind of exist in a series like that, but
yeah,
not too
same.
Many that would be an actual spinoff.
Same. So we are going to talk about Blood of Olympus some more, but before we do, we'd like to remind you that this podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 150,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. And for our listeners, Audible is offering a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their service. And one audiobook that you might like to consider is, unsurprisingly, Blood of Olympus by Rick Riordan, which we are talking about today. So, I mean, spoiler alert, don't continue listening if you haven't read it yet. But Kristen actually listened to this on audiobook, didn't you, Kristen?
Yes, I did. And yes, I did, from Audible.
Oh, there you go. And was it like one person reading, doing lots of voices, or were there multiple people? Break it down for us.
It's one person. It's not Jesse Bernstein who read the Percy Jackson and the Olympian series. It's a different reader, but he was really good. I have a problem if the reader isn't really consistent, and this guy is very consistent with the voices and all of that, but he was really good, so I recommend it.
Yeah, there's a lot of voices to get your head around in this, so I feel like that would be a large component of your enjoyment. So Kristen says it's great. So, you know, if you want a different experience of listening to this book, maybe try out that one, or you can try out any of the other thousands and thousands of books that Audible have. So for a free audiobook of your choice, like Blood of Olympus or another one that we've mentioned today, you can go to audiblepodcast.com/bookhype. That's audiblepodcast.com/bookhype.
Okay, so Blood of Olympus by Barrow or don't bother? Let's start with you, Marima.
I would say buy it because I'm assuming if you're reading it, you've gotten through this far into the series. So, like, for your own closure, yeah, you know, buy it. So if you've been reading them this far, then you've obviously been enjoying them. So support the author, buy the book. It might not be like one that you reread many, many times, but you need it to complete your set that's on your shelf. You know, like you need to have all the covers next to each other. So I would say buy it.
That's good logical reasoning that I approve of. Kristen, what about you?
Same here. I think I enjoyed it a little more than the general online consensus. I did a little digging yesterday, and I think I liked it a little more, but definitely a buy for me. It was a good, fun end to the Heroes of Olympus series, and I really enjoyed it.
Cool. I obviously agree that you should buy it, especially since it's the last book of the series. I definitely liked it, and I guess we can talk about how we felt about it as the final book for Heroes Olympus as well, because I feel like there was some... It wasn't resolved in every place, and I'm not saying that that's a bad thing, because I hope that perhaps there will be more Percy Jackson books in the future. That would be really amazing. But I think as a final book, it definitely served its purpose to close out the story of Gaia Rising. And we did get, you know, some resolution with a few of the characters, especially Percy and Annabeth, which people are obviously very, very invested in. So I think that, yeah, some people online have been saying that they're a little disappointed or that it was kind of underwhelming. But I think that overall, it was still an excellent book, very well written and very much in line with the other Percy Jackson books. Okay, so... let's talk about some of the themes in Blood of Olympus. One of the big ones was the demigods and the gods working together. And this kind of came to a point when they were fighting the Titans, and they had to work together in order to defeat them. It was the only way it was going to happen. And for me, I really liked this because the gods have always been a little distant from the demigods, and it was nice to just sort of see them team up together in the end and be able to defeat them. So what did you guys think of that?
I loved that part, like that chapter or whatever, where they, I think it was Jason who was looking around at everyone fighting with their godly parent. And I was just like eating it up. Like, I'm just like, oh, that's so cool. Like, I'm picturing, you know, Athena and Annabeth like fighting side by side. And I'm like, that's just really awesome. And I really enjoyed that chapter a lot.
Did you also enjoy it because he was talking about how awesome Piper was?
Well, yeah. What's funny is, I didn't love Piper before this book. Like, I kind of, I always liked her. She was there and, you know, whatever. But before this book, I didn't really have a massive opinion of her. After this book, I love Piper a lot. Like, she really grew on me, and I really, really loved her and Aphrodite in that scene too. Like, that's just great. Like, Aphrodite just kind of throwing rose petals and cheering her on. Like, it's just genius.
Yeah, that was pretty good. I enjoyed that. What changed your mind about Piper?
It had a lot to do with the scene with her and Annabeth in the cavern thing with the statue of Ares that was like chained up or whatever. It had a lot to do with that. I just thought it was really important that she is that different from Annabeth, and yet they can see the value in each other. Like, I thought it was a really, really nice way to kind of say, yes, wisdom is important and it's, you know, a valued asset in a person, but that's not the only thing that can get the job done. And sometimes it can be a colossal hindrance. And I just thought that Piper, like, illustrating that being in touch with your emotions and not afraid of being afraid or of being angry and just embracing how you feel is a really, really important and really cool message to kind of get across in a book like this.
That was one of the scenes that might have made me cry a little bit because it was so good.
What do you mean one of the scenes? How many times did you cry?
Like four times.
What?
Probably.
No joke. I cried four times. I highlighted them because I was
I was in the middle of Port Authority. I was in the middle of Port Authority, like surrounded by all these people in New York City, and I was like, oh God, hold it together, hold it together. And there were like tears in my eyes. I was like, don't let them fall. Aww. Yeah, it was.
Like, you can do it. You can do it.
I know. Don't laugh, Irma. But I also really love that part between Piper and Annabeth because they're so different, and I felt like they didn't really have too much of a connection before that. They didn't really have a reason to depend on each other as much as they did in this book, and it was really important, like you were saying, to show that they both have these assets, and while they're good for their own things, sometimes they have to team up together, and when they team up together, they're basically unstoppable. And I think that was just a really awesome girl power moment too. And I love how Piper is always sort of looked at as, oh, she's the daughter of Aphrodite, you know, what can she do? And yet she was so amazing in this book and the last couple of books. And I love the way that Jason looks at her and just is like, wow, she's amazing. And not because she's beautiful, but because of all these other talents that she has.
Yeah, I feel like the other books do a really great job of showing each of the girls and what they have to offer. But until this book, more often than not, it was the girl and the boy who were going to save the day, or Annabeth proving that she was, you know, her powers were worthwhile or whatever. In this book, I feel like a lot of the time the girls stepped forward and got to really shine. And in this case, work together, Annabeth and Piper and Reyna working with everyone at one point or another. It was really, really nice to see the girls kind of band together and help each other and see that they don't necessarily need these smelly boys to get the job done. Like, they are perfectly capable, and I loved that.
Yeah, that's true, actually. That was definitely present more in this book than in any of the others, although sort of negated by how it ended. But, like, aside from that, yeah, lots of girl power, as it should be, because girls are way better than boys.
That kind of segues really nicely into the found family theme too, especially that friendship between Piper and Annabeth and how much they relied on each other. But there were a lot of other characters who found a new family throughout the series, and it kind of culminated in this final book. And the two that really stood out to me were Jason, who was from the Roman camp and sort of switched over to the Greek camp, but in the end is going to be going back and forth. But he did find a whole new family, a whole new group of friends amongst the Greeks. And then you have Nico, who always felt like he was on the periphery, and now he has very solid friendships with a lot of people and has kind of found his home in the Greek camp finally after all this time.
Yeah, I really, really liked this theme. This is like a theme that is like very important to me to see represented in books, I guess. I really love when they, you know, it's this idea that the family that you're born with is not necessarily the family that's like best for you, and you can make your own family that will give you that support and that love that you need. I feel like I should put a general disclaimer on talking about this book, that I feel like Rick Riordan's writing, it's not the most subtle in the world. So let's just put that caveat out there. So like this theme, as with many others, was like, oh, I found this family, and like, oh, I don't need my old family, I like this family. It's like, yes, we get it. But, you know, subtleties aside, I felt it was dealt with very well, in particular with these two. I mean, I feel like you kind of get hints at it with the others who have been to one camp and then come to the other camp, like more so than ones who have just stayed in like the Roman side or the Greek side. But those ones who have the crossover and have, you know, a little identity crisis about it, this is definitely present there. But yeah, I would agree with these two, dealt with very well and satisfactorily, I think, by the end. Like, I feel people would be happy with how it played out. But it was also a nice addition because it's not really something that he has dealt with as much in the other books.
Right.
Yeah. I was really, really happy to see a return to the Piper, Jason, and Leo trio. Like, they had a really good bond prior to the series really kicking off, because I believe they were the very first book in the series that they kind of showed up. And I really liked that we got to see those three, like, have a couple of moments in this final chapter. You know, and notwithstanding, they got some really great moments here and there to kind of touch on just how close these three really are and how much they really do care about each other. And I thought that was really, really great. I also fell in love with the Reyna Nico friendship, and
yes.
their kinship is so unbelievably sweet. And so it was the last pairing I thought of prior to this book. Like, I would not have thought, oh, Reyna and Nico be best friends. You know, that's duh, that's going to happen. But it snuck up on me. And as I'm reading it, I'm like, this makes total sense. Like, oh my goodness, I can't believe, you know, I'm so happy for these two because they really did need someone. And it doesn't necessarily have to be romantic to be important and life changing. And I feel like it really is for them.
Yes, exactly. And Merma, I want to ask you about Reyna, because Kristen and I were talking about her a little bit earlier today and how she kind of snuck up on us as this character that we didn't really expect to end up the way she did. I mean, she was amazing from the beginning. She was very strong, but she was also a little bit of an opposition to the main group until she decided to get on board with what they did and obviously help them with the Athena Parthenos statue. And I just wanted to know how you felt about Reyna now that this last book has ended.
Yeah, I actually really liked Reyna from when we met her, because I found her to be very interesting and more complex maybe than some of the other, like, then not point of view characters, because we didn't really get a point of view from her. Yeah, I always really liked her. Obviously, like, she takes a larger role in this book, so you get more time to spend with her and you understand more of her motivations and why she's doing the things that she does, which I think always helps you to like a character more. But yeah, I always really liked her. I found her very interesting. I am a big fan of, like, kick-ass ladies, so I was always a big fan of Reyna, and I'm glad to see her get the appreciation that she deserves, because she's cool and I like her a lot. And I liked that her storyline was not about romance as well. That was nice.
Yes, especially since it seemed like everybody else was sort of paired off in the end. It was kind of nice to have, I think realistic, I should say, to have somebody whose storyline didn't revolve around finding somebody to spend the rest of their life with at the age of 16 or whatever.
Yeah, that's, we can talk about that later. Yeah.
They're demigods. No year is guaranteed in their lives, so put it that way.
This is true. But speaking of Reyna as well, one of the last major themes of this book was the squashing of rivalries, and we got that between the Greek and Romans, which I think in the end was a really cool action sequence, but also between Percy and Annabeth, which in a lot of ways has been done before, but I really liked that moment when they were underground and Percy kissed Annabeth and was like, the rivalry ends here. And it was a lot about just these different pairings, especially even when we talk about Annabeth and Piper, you know, different people coming together and working together despite the fact that their parents never got along or that they grew up in two completely different situations. It was really cool to watch that play out over Blood of Olympus.
Yeah, I think this book was kind of about odd couples, as it were. Like, it's about these combinations of characters that you wouldn't necessarily expect, or, you know, like you said, dealing with the kind of rivalry that's there. So you see it with Nico and Reyna, also with, is it Leo when he goes off with Hazel and Frank instead of Piper and Jason, or, you know, he like takes them for his plan. And mm-hmm. it's like putting together these combinations of characters that it makes sense because it's the last book that we're not going to get a chance to see them again, but like still managing to surprise the audience. So I feel like that's partly what this kind of rivalries thing ties into, because I, like you said, Percy and Annabeth, that's kind of been done. But for me, the Greek-Roman thing was actually more interesting than the big bad fight anyway. Like, that's been more interesting to me through this entire series. So I was more curious about how that was going to be resolved. And like you said, good action sequence. But again, like that scene at the end where, you know, they're like all talking about what they're going to do and everything. And you're... I don't know how I'm trying to say this, but it opens up more opportunities for the characters by combining these two worlds, and you get to see like these characters who you would never thought of hanging out with each other, like suddenly being friends, and you know, that kind of, I felt like that was a theme throughout this book. I don't know if that made sense at all.
Yeah. No, it
made sense. I was really, really glad to see the Percy Annabeth little rivalry squashing scene. Before I started the book, I knew that we weren't going to get a Percy or an Annabeth POV chapter. Like, I knew we weren't going to get it. And I was a little nervous about it because it's the last Percy Jackson book and we aren't going to get any moments from either of them. Like, that, you know, that kind of terrified me. But I liked how he worked them into the story and how we got moments separately with both of them, and that we did get this last little moment in here that just, it was really, really nice, because I think it speaks to more than just the romance, like more than just them. It's, they really do want to kind of squash the rivalry between those two gods. Like, it might not actually do that, but if they can play any part in that, you know that they would both be on board. So I thought that was really cute.
But don't you feel like that scene was less about squashing the rivalry, which I feel like we can all agree they have done before? Like, they have gone over this issue before in the entire like 10 books that have been written about them, and more about, you know, giving the fans something like a nice makeout scene with the two of them. Because I was just reading it being like, okay, gratuitous, I get it, moving on.
Us Percibeth shippers needed a moment, okay? Just one.
Yeah.
Just one moment.
Well, that's what I mean. I felt like that's what it was, less so than like, that, you know, the rivalry, that's great too. It's all great.
He worked it into the story well, let's put it that way.
Karen, did you miss a Percy / Annabeth point of view chapter? Were you missing that in this book?
You know, I wasn't until the end, when I believe it was Nico who went up to Percy and Annabeth and they were talking about what they were going to do. And I was sort of like, man, I really would like to hear all of this coming from Percy's point of view. Up until that point, I think he did a really good job actually of spreading out the love between all of the characters, giving them roughly an equal amount to do and say, and like we said before, pairing off the characters in different groups where they had to interact with people that maybe they didn't interact with a whole lot before. I think having this being the last book, it was really important to solidify some of those friendships that might not have been as solid before this book came out.
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of would have liked a chapter from Annabeth. I don't care so much about Percy.
I love both of them, and I wanted something. Well, I agree with you, Karen. I really would have liked to see something toward the end for Percy. Like, I would have liked to get one last dose of his point of view before the book ended, because there was a lot that kind of happened all at once at the end for him, you know, like just tying up his story entirely. I would have liked to have seen how he reacted to some of that. And I always love Annabeth and I love her POVs, so I was sad we didn't get that either. But there was a lot of them in House of Hades, so if I'm missing them, I can always go back to that.
Yeah, but it kind of means that you lack the closure for those characters, because like you said, you get to the end of the book and and like in the background, you know, I think it is in that Nico chapter, like he's chatting to what's his name, his new boyfriend, and which we can talk about later, and in the background you hear like Percy and Annabeth are cheering and they're like, oh, like, you know, he's agreed, or we're gonna go off to New Rome or whatever they're doing, and you're like, wait, have they been talking about this entire time? Like, why didn't we know about this? Like, has this been going on in the background, this, you know, discussion? I want to know what was going down here. So you kind of feel like you've missed out, and that was also, I feel like I need to get this off my chest. I don't really like Jason. So the entire time I was reading this, I was like, less Jason, more Annabeth, please, with the point of view chapters.
Maybe that's why. I don't dislike Jason, but he seems fairly bland to me. And I think somebody like Annabeth is a lot more interesting.
Yeah. I just don't really care about Jason at all.
Jason grew on me in this book. Prior to this book, I was with you. He was really, really bland for me, and I didn't really care. But I liked the stuff that we kind of got about him and Zeus. And I guess there's probably like one scene or one part that kind of got me when he's talking about, like, when he's talking with Zeus and with all of the other gods, like with the Apollo thing. I liked that scene for him and for his character, but you're right. I mean, he doesn't really have a whole lot going on. So, yeah. But, I mean, I had the right amount of Jason. It wasn't too much for me.
It was way too much for me.
More Annabeth. Always more Annabeth.
Oh, Leo. I'm a big Leo fan.
Oh, yeah.
Huge Leo fan.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like the reason why maybe I was okay with not really having Percy and Annabeth is because I feel like House of Hades was their book in a lot of ways. I mean, we got other people's point of views, but it had a lot to do with them. And I think one of the reasons why, I mean, you guys know that I love House of Hades. One of the reasons why I don't think I was as big a fan of Blood of Olympus is because House of Hades was very, it had a lot of Percy introspection, and I feel like in Blood of Olympus, it was all like action. There was a lot less internalizing events and stuff like that. I mean, obviously you got some of that and there were some quieter moments, but it was a really action-packed story. So do you guys feel like that impacted how you felt about the book at all?
Yes.
Yeah,
definitely.
Yes and no. Yeah.
I think it's just going to be a problem in any final book in a series, because readers expect it to be the climax of the series. So it has to have a lot of action, like a series like this. It needs to have a lot of action by necessity. But I think also one of the problems that he had was dropping these hints about how things were going to be solved at the end without letting the reader in on the surprise, which is why you can't have that introspection, because, you know, you couldn't have like Jason or Leo, either of them being like super reflective in this and thinking about, you know, what's going to happen and et cetera, et cetera, because it would give it away. I think a perceptive reader would have been able to work it out anyway, but, you know, it would give it away very obviously how he was going to solve this problem at the end. So I feel like that is one reason why with some of the other characters, we got a little more, like I would argue with Piper, we got a bit of introspection. Definitely Raina and Nico had a little more of that, but definitely nothing on the scale of House of Hades.
Agreed. I didn't think about that before, that, you know, they wouldn't want to give away their plans. So you can't really have them thinking internally about all of these things. So yeah, that does make sense.
Yeah, I think it probably depends like what you are interested in. And, you know, if Jason had a lot of introspection, this, like, I wouldn't have been very interested in that because I don't really like Jason. But everyone likes Percy and Annabeth, so everyone is happy to read more about them.
Right.
You know.
And their every thought.
Yeah. Well, also, it's that was kind of a necessity of House of Hades, because they were stuck together in this, like, not confined, but restricted area. You know, like they were stuck in Hades, so there was action, but it couldn't be action all the time because of just the environment that he had put them in, you know, versus this where they could, I forgot when I read this book how much time they spend going between, like, now we're at this place, now we're at this place, now we're at this place, and there's, like, 14 battles in, like, 20 chapters. And you just think, yes. Like, oh, God, what are we doing? Like, just everyone needs to take a breather, you know? I forgot that it was so fast-paced until I read it again and was like, oh, yeah, this is how they go.
And widespread.
I mean,
they're all over the world, too, so...
Yeah, why didn't they come to Australia? I was kind of sad. They went everywhere
else. I had what you'd like to call a travel fatigue, like, in the book. Like, they were here.
You're getting some jet lag.
And then they were, yeah, like, it was ridiculous. I'm like, oh, my gosh, like, these poor kids, like, I'm tired after an 8-hour flight. And here they are, you know, traipsing around most of Italy and, oh, like, just crazy. But, yeah, no, I kind of had a bit of that, too, where I stepped back and I went, wow. They've covered a lot of ground in like 20 chapters. All right, let's keep going.
It does impress me the way that he continues to think of new ways to have battles and make them interesting, though. Like, that is a skill that he definitely has, because it doesn't feel repetitive. And when he literally has like at least 10 to 15 battles in every book, that's quite impressive. The fact that you're not reading it being like, I feel like this has happened before.
And with this one in particular, I really felt the scope of, like, the amount of characters that he had to wrangle and get in certain places and everyone involved in a specific battle and making sure we knew what was happening with all of them because they're all important to us. And I think at one point he said, like, why did I choose to have, you know, 7 main characters for this whole quest that they went on? This prophecy, and I can't imagine how exhausting that must be to try to wrangle all of them at once.
Yeah, but it's not even 7, it's like 15, because you have all of these extra characters who may have started out as side characters, but are essentially main characters in this book.
Right. And, you know, let's talk about that as one of the last few big points that we have for this book, because we have basically, and I mean, there's more than just these three, but 3 major unfinished stories, in my opinion, and that's Leo, Reyna, and Nico. And I'm kind of on the fence about this because on one side, I'm really upset that we didn't get more of a conclusion for them. But on the other, I'm kind of happy because I'm hoping that means he'll revisit their stories at some point. So, you know, we have Leo, who didn't end up dying and went to find Calypso and is sort of just flying around on his dragon and not letting his friends know that he's alive. And then we have Reyna, who brought up a couple of times about not finding happiness with another demigod, which I think was really vague and interesting, but I don't really know where that's going. And then we have Nico, who obviously found Will Solace, and there's definitely a friendship blossoming there. Who knows if it's going to turn into more, but, you know, none of these had a solid resolution, so... I don't know. Kristen, what did you think about that? Did you like that or did you dislike it?
Well, as I said in the little book bites discussion, I am always game for more time with characters I love. And honestly, all 3 of these characters are characters that I now am invested in and that I really, really would love to see more of. So out of the 3 of them, Nico's story, I think, still has a lot to be told, and I would really, really, really love to read more of his point of view. I mean, we didn't get a whole lot of it, so what I've read now, and especially from this book, I really, really, really would love to hear more from Nico. As far as Reyna's unfinished storyline, I think that's the most intriguing for me, because throughout these books, we've only ever seen demigod, like, relationships, like romances or whatnot. It's always been Percy found Annabeth and Piper found Jason and, you know, Hazel and Frank found each other. I think it's a really cool idea that Reyna, her happiness doesn't lie in another demigod. Like, she might end up with a god. Maybe she, you know, finds this lasting romance and ends up joining the gods, or maybe it's a human or something. Like, I feel like that's a really cool story that would touch on a different aspect of this whole Greek Roman lifestyle thing. Like, I think that would be a really interesting way to steer the series after this.
Yeah, my main issue with these books is this reliance on the need for a romance to be like the ultimate, well, I'm not going to say that word, the ultimate resolution for someone's storyline. I feel like he's too reliant on that. He makes it too important. And, you know, that's not to say that like romantic relationships are not important, but I wish that there was a greater emphasis on being able to find happiness or, you know, peace, acceptance, joy, etc. in other friendships, in other relationships, not necessarily romantic ones, which is why I liked that Raina's storyline was left as it was. Although I kind of wish at the end she hadn't still been like, oh, you know, they said I'll never find someone, Lola. I was just like, can't you just be awesome and in charge of everyone and like kicking everyone's ass? You literally just saved the world. Just be amazing. And you're amazing. So, you know, don't worry about boys. Like that shit will, I mean, that will sort itself out. and, you know, the same thing with Nico, although I felt like, again, that was a little too obvious of a thing of being like, oh, like he's over Percy because he's got this blonde guy now. So don't worry about him. I just, you know, I wish that that had been less of an emphasis on like the need for everyone to end up in a couple. So, yeah, the fact that some of them didn't was nice, but at the same time, the way it was dealt with was left very open-ended, as if, well, they're not in a couple yet, so like I'll be writing a short story about them. Don't you worry. That's how I felt about it.
Yeah, I agree. And one of the reasons why I liked Leo's storyline so much in the earlier books was because it was so obvious that Hazel had chosen Frank. And I thought, okay, he's sort of the third wheel here, and he needs some time to get over that, and that's okay. And then he found Calypso, and I really love her, and I love that their relationship. I think it's really interesting and funny, but I really liked that aspect of Leo back then. And like you were saying, Raina, she is such a kick-ass character. I was kind of upset that in the end she was kind of depressed about, you know, whether or not she had found somebody. And it was like, yeah, you know, I mean, you have so much more going for you. This isn't something that you need to be concentrating on, especially at your age, you know. But I don't know. At the same time, I would really like more books or short stories or something to just learn more about these characters because I like them so much.
Yeah, see, that's why these books never, like, end without a cliffhanger, because of suckers like you who say, just write more books that I can buy, please.
Just more, goes, more.
Would yeah, you guys, please, sir, can I have some more?
Would you guys read more Percy Jackson books if he came out with them?
Yes.
Is that Kristen's even like, a... obviously.
Come on.
Yes. It would depend. I don't think I would read another like 5-book series about these characters. I might read, you know, if he wrote a novella about someone that I was interested in, maybe, but I think I'm done. I think I'm done with them. I've read about them for like 10 books. That's enough.
Okay. I would definitely read more. I don't think that's a surprise to anybody.
Obviously.
But I mean, I've been invested in these books for a really long time too. You've read them in like...
Yeah, I read all the first 9 in 1 week in July.
Yeah.
And then I just read the last one. So I'm like, oh, I'm so exhausted. I can't believe I had to wait like 3 months to read the last book.
Oh, God. So basically,
my life is so hard.
Your opinion's invalid. So we're just going to go with what Kristen and I said.
Uh-huh. Hey, I'm counting on you guys to read them and then you can tell me if I should read them or not. It's perfect okay. scenario for me.
All right.
Deal. Although I'll just tell you if I liked them and if it was because of the romance, then you can just skip it.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I need.
So let's talk about Nico a little bit right now, because his resolution with the whole Percy thing and the Will Solace thing is literally the only thing on Tumblr right now. Like, I googled Blood of Olympus, went to Tumblr, and it's all just...
What's their ship name?
It's Solangelo.
Yeah.
Wow, that's terrible.
It's kind of great. I think it's
I
great.
Like it. Yeah.
I hate it.
But okay, here's my thing, because I really liked Nico's character development. I think this being a middle grade novel, having a gay character is not
something. Are they really, really middle grade at this point, though? Like, these ones are young adult.
Okay, you could probably bump this one up to young adult. But when we first met...
I would say these are YA.
Or, yeah. But when you first meet Nico, he is younger. But I mean,
I'll give you that, yes.
Even still, a lot of younger kids do read these books. I mean, a lot of younger kids read YA too, but we're still at the point where having a gay character, a prominent gay character, is not all too common. I mean, it's becoming more common, but I really liked the way that Nico progressed throughout the whole two series of books. I think that was really interesting how he became so important later on. And the fact that he had a crush on Percy, I thought was really interesting because we knew that Percy was in love with Annabeth and there would have to be some sort of resolution to Nico's crush. But in the end, I thought it was really, really heavy-handed how he handled it. And even though I like the idea of Nico finding someone else, and I think Will Solace is a really cool dude, and it seems like their opposite personalities might be good for each other, I don't know. I just felt like it was really heavy-handed, and he probably could have written it a little bit better. What do you guys think?
Yeah. Has this Will Solace guy been in the other books? He has, right?
Yeah.
As like a minor character.
He's been mentioned here and there, yeah.
Yeah, so I would totally agree. Again, I would have really liked... I did really like the idea of Nico having a crush on Percy. I feel like it made sense because Percy kind of has this savior thing going on about him. Nico was a lot younger. You know, he kind of idolized Percy because he was maybe struggling with his sexuality that like manifested in a different way. That makes a lot of sense to me. You know, if it was a younger girl, it probably would have been the same thing with her having a crush on Percy because he seemed a lot older and mature and like was very exciting. I didn't like how it resolved. I would have much preferred if it had resolved with Nico and Raina's friendship being him being like, hey, I have these like this amazing BFF now. And I've realized that, you know, like maybe I had a bit of a crush on you, but that was just me dealing with some other things, not necessarily about you. And you're not really my type. And I'm kind of over it. But I want to put it out there without him like rebounding to someone else very obviously immediately after. Like, I didn't like the fact that it was a replacement, you know. I would have, and I think it kind of it's not good for his character development either, for like he has grown so much, as you said, over all of these books, and then at the end for it to be like, oh, I don't like you because I'm very obviously like gonna end up with this guy, but we're just not gonna say it overtly. Like, that's, I didn't like that. I thought that was kind of lazy storytelling. And, You know, it's just, it felt too easy. Like it just felt, I mean, I get it. He wanted him to end up with someone. But then at the same time, it's like, well, but if you're not going to come out and say it, then I don't know. It feels a little disingenuous to the audience.
Yes.
Because the audience is very obviously going to read between the lines and be like, oh, you know, so they're together now. But if you're not going to come out and say it, it just seems... Yeah, I don't know. I didn't like it.
I felt like it was fan service.
Right, exactly.
Because he knew that people loved Nico, and he knew that they wanted him with somebody. And I feel like if he had played this over the course of the entire book instead of just in the last few chapters, it would have gone over a lot well. But it was so quick at the end that you're right, it was kind of disingenuous.
Yeah, it definitely felt like fan service. And when you're doing that with a gay character, then you kind of get into this gray area of queer baiting, which is really problematic. Mm-hmm. Because fans will read between the lines of that, as I said. And if you don't come out and say it, then it's like, well, I mean, as far as he has said, like according to the canon of the book, like Nico had a crush on Percy, then he could very well be like, oh no, like Nico's bi or Nico's straight, but he had a crush or, you know, whatever. Like he hasn't said, oh, now he's in another relationship with this guy. So it kind of discounts that anyway. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it's kind of obnoxious. For me, I didn't like it.
For me, the whole thing set kind of strange for me, more so because Nico is what? 16. I mean, I'm guessing, I think that's about his age. At 16, even if you're over your crush, like, your first instinct isn't to go tell them, or at least it was never for me. Like, even if it was someone who I liked before and it was kind of over it, I wasn't like, oh, I need to go tell him right now. And I don't feel like Nico, the kid who wouldn't tell anyone anything about him, who doesn't like to be touched, who, you know, skulks in the shadows, I don't feel like his first instinct would be, I need to tell Percy in front of Annabeth right now, because he's standing there. And I need, you know, like, I'm going to go take care of that. It just seemed really unrealistic for me. And that's why it sat weird for me. I liked that while this Will thing kind of came out of nowhere, I see your point with, like, the queer baiting and having to be really careful about that. But I also see, like, he wanted it to be clear that Nico wasn't alone. And I appreciated, like, I wanted to know that Nico is not, you know, like, I think he was setting it up to kind of say, Nico's not the only one of his kind. He's not the only gay character in this world. Like, there are more. Yes, he's felt alone forever, but that doesn't mean he's going to stay that way. And that I thought was a nice touch to the ending of the story. But again, if he is going to write more from Nico's perspective, which we don't know, we have no idea. If he does, I feel like that's something that maybe could have waited, but maybe he's not. And if he's not, then I'm glad we got some sort of resolution for him.
I just think that he already showed that Nico wasn't alone because of the development of the friendship with Reyna, which was really interesting and, like, was, in my opinion, one of the best parts of this book. And I understand what you're saying about it being unrealistic, but I feel like him going and telling Percy was Raiden's way of showing Nico is becoming a more open person. Maybe it wasn't the best way of doing that, but, you know, I get what he was trying to do. I think it's just, like, this Will Solis character, like, comes out of nowhere, and everyone's going to be so mad at me, but he comes out of nowhere and then he starts saying, like, you were never alone here. Like, you always had friends here. And, you know, I'm sure I can go back and read those books and find zero evidence of that, of that. So it just seemed like there was no foreshadowing, or it hadn't been built up. It just kind of came out of nowhere, and we had to be like, as readers, oh, you know, Nico did have friends and he just didn't realize it. Like, that's the moral of the story. And yeah, it didn't work. That was, it's probably my least favorite thing of this entire book, which is saying something, because I really don't like Jason. Yeah, that's how I measure things. Like, is it better or worse than Jason as a character? Wow. Yeah. I don't like him, guys. I don't know why. I just don't. Although speaking of Nico, I did really like the Nico-Jason friendship that kind of developed over the last book and this book. Mm-hmm. That was cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I see Nico having, like, platonic friends is very important to me. I just want him to have, like, all these awesome platonic friends and just hang out and be like, I don't need a man, like, I'm great. And why
he's
didn't that happen?
He's definitely had the most dynamic character growth, like,
yeah,
from the 11 year old boy we met, you know, in the beginning of the Percy Jackson and the Olympian series to now. He has changed dramatically, and that's really, I mean, and that's just a great character. Like, Nico is just a great all-around character. So seeing him craft friendships with all of these different types of people now is awesome. And so that is more or less what I carry away from all of this. Like, yes, whether or not him and Will end up being together doesn't matter.
Yeah.
What did you
Although
guys...
Although it does to Tumblr.
Yeah, yes, stay away from Tumblr.
Everyone on
That's
Tumblr.
True. It was a little scary on there. I did not stay long. I was just looking for what people were talking about, and it was basically all Nico and Will. So there you go. But oddly enough, this book was actually kind of about the defeat of Gaia, which
boring.
Took place, you know, honestly, it kind of was. I mean, I was interested yep. in it, but the fact that she rose and then was defeated so quickly in the end.
She was defeated in like 5 pages.
Really?
Such a letdown.
Yeah, really strange to me. And granted, I really liked how she was defeated, you know, getting her away from the earth and then the fireball. I thought that was a really good resolution, but it just, I don't know, it did fall kind of flat to me.
For me, the having an example of a god who had similar power but was a spirit of the air that got pulled to the ground and was defeated, that was a little much. Like, that gave away what was going to happen. Like, I knew that her defeat was going to be really fast because they got a basically a blueprint of, okay, so this has been done before with this sky god, and here's how you defeat her. Ready, set, go. And so once we heard about, I can't pronounce his name, the sky god, I knew that it wasn't going to take them very long once they finally got to Gia. Like, once we finally got there, it was just going to be fast. And it was. So I wasn't surprised.
Yeah, it's just too, so overt. Like, I mean, just hit me in the head with an anvil next time, why don't you? You know, like that whole thing about Jason being like, oh, you know, we have to do this thing and Percy won't be able to be involved. It's like, well, I guess you're going to be in the sky then. And like, oh, it's Jason and Leo. Like, I guess you're going to blow her up in the air. We get it. Was just, I don't know. My biggest question with this was, okay, I liked that it was the three of them at the end. That was interesting to me that it wasn't like Percy and Annabeth, that it was the three that we started with. But it kind of undermines Hazel and Frank, first of all, and their importance, because they basically do nothing in this entire book. And you're like, why are there seven? Like, why aren't there just, you know, five? And also, wasn't Jason meant to be like the big play at the end? Like, didn't they keep saying, oh, like, you're her last play. Like, you were her first move. You're going to be her last move. Did I like sleep through that? When did that happen? When was that a thing that happened?
Well, at the very beginning of the book with his mother, I think that was part of Jason's big play. And the fact that he came to terms with that and figured that out on his own rather quickly, I think was something that was supposed to kind of undo what Hera had originally planned. Like, I think that had a lot to do with it.
I just feel like in the resolution of Gaia as like the big bad of these books, there were so many things that were just kind of dismissed so that he could get to the Greek and Roman stuff, which I get it. It's more interesting. Like, it's totally more interesting than Gaia. But he spent so much time being like, oh, Gaia. Like, all right, we get it. Now you have to pay it off. You know, you've talked about it this entire time. You can't get rid of her in less than a chapter if you've been talking about her for five books. Like, it's not satisfactory to a reader. That's just how it goes. If you didn't want it to be this huge deal, then you shouldn't have made it a huge deal. But you wrote it into your books, so now you have to pay it off. And it wasn't paid off. And like the Jason thing wasn't paid off. We spent an entire book with Percy being like, what's my flaw? Like, what's my big flaw that's going to be the thing? And like, his big flaw was saying to Jason, okay, you guys can go in the sky. Like, I'll just stay down here. Seriously? Like, talk about a letdown. That was so disappointing. So I don't know. It didn't feel very well thought out to me. It didn't feel planned, this book in general. Like, it didn't feel like he had sat down at the start and thought, okay, this is how it's going to work out, because a lot of things in this book seemed rushed and last minute. And then a lot of other things he built up throughout four other books and then just totally dismissed in this. So, and that kind of culminated with this defeat of Gaia. Like, all of these things played into that. And I feel like that's why it was so unsatisfactory.
Yeah.
Sorry. I just amazed myself with my own negativity. I didn't realize I felt so strongly about it.
Wow.
Until I started talking. I apologize.
That's funny. You know, to play devil's advocate a little bit, I'm wondering, because Gaia is this primordial god and she is so unbelievably powerful, I feel like she couldn't have spent half the book roaming around freely, because she was so strong that she was just going to wreak havoc. And so her defeat had to come quickly. And, you know, I agree with everything you just said. I am unhappy with the way that it was resolved. But at the same time, I feel like maybe he didn't really have a choice in that, because if she had really been allowed to roam free and, you know, do what she wanted to do, it would have been over pretty quickly for everybody else.
I totally agree with that. But I feel like there are other ways he could have done it where it was just as fast, but, you know, maybe like they had a plan and then that plan didn't work because Gaia is like a primordial god and she's smarter than five demigods, and they had to change it or something like that. But like Kristen said, it was very much them following a blueprint, like a dummy's guide to defeating a god. And and that was, yeah, kind of boring. I was like, all right, we've done this now, so let's talk about some other interesting things, I guess.
I have to say one of the biggest letdowns for me was they spent at least two books or a good portion of the last one talking about the blood of Olympus and the two demigods that, you know, they were clearly going to be Annabeth and Percy, whose blood had to be shed on the stones of whatever to raise Gaia. And then they get there and he has a nosebleed, and Percy's reaction to that when he's, oh, come on, I got a little nosebleed and I wake up the entire earth. That's not fair. Like that was me. Like, that's me reading the book. Like, are you serious? Like, that's seriously all they had to do. Like, they were talking about killing them, like, just, you know, like splitting all their blood. Not that I wanted Percy or Annabeth dead, but it just seemed like really, really easy that a drop of each of their blood was enough to raise this giant primordial goddess. Like, it's like, okay.
Did you guys think that someone was going to die in this book? Because
oh, yeah.
They have talked about that this entire time. Oh,
I didn't think someone was going to die.
You hoped someone would?
I kind of thought it would have raised the stakes of the book if someone would have died. Because in all of these books, I mean, for the majority, not very many people die. Like, usually they find a way out of it. They find a way to save the day. And so I feel like if one or two of these seven would have had to die in order for the end to be, you know, the end product of saving the world to actually happen, I would not have been crushed. Like, I would have been sad to say goodbye to the character, but I would have understood that it had to be done. You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Guess who?
I don't love death. What? Who? Jason?
Yep.
I that in the end it was kind of going to be Leo to make the sacrifice play, because I feel like they've been sort of leading up to that since book one, really. He's always sort of been on the outskirts. He's always sort of wondered what his role was going to be. And for him to do this, I wasn't surprised. And honestly, I was expecting somebody to die. I wasn't sure who it was going to be. I figured that maybe it would be Leo just because of what I just said. But I also thought that if he were to die, he would find a way maybe not to come back, but to join the gods or something like that. Maybe I was just channeling a lot of like the Hercules movie or something when that happened there. But I don't know. I feel like the stakes weren't high enough, that there wasn't enough carnage. And that feels kind of weird coming from this type of book, which is really quite lighthearted. But yeah, I think it could have used a little bit more danger, I guess, infused into the pages.
Yeah, I agree. I think it lessens the impact of the book when you feel like, exactly, everyone's going to get a get out of jail free card. And I hoped that one of them would die, but I knew, like, no, it's not going to happen. Because, like you said, the obvious choice is Leo, not just because he's kind of on the outer, but because, surprise, surprise, he's the only one not in a relationship. So he's, like, kind of the easy person to be like, well, see you later. But also, as you said, like, they spent all this time going on about Leo is actually a genius. And I love that about Leo. What, you know, would have been cool, this would have taken the book in a very twisted and dark direction, was if Leo made the sacrifice, but the fireball killed Jason, and then Leo has to live with the guilt of that for the rest of his life.
Oh,
and
my
so he
God.
Runs off with Calypso, and then, like, he doesn't tell it. Oh, my God, I just wrote the greatest spin-off series. That would have been so good. But I kind of wanted it to be Jason because it would have made sense. Like, that was the big play, you know, do the self-sacrifice thing. And then Piper could have just been awesome and, like, had adventures with Annabeth. And I would never have had to read a Jason chapter again in my life. But, yeah, it lessens the impact of the story because you feel like, well, they keep saying about, oh, there's so much risk and, oh, so much sacrifice. And as a reader, you think, Not really, though, because you're all going to be fine. Like, I know you're all going to be fine. So, yeah, that makes it.
If you would have asked me at the beginning of these books, like, of this book, who I thought was probably in the most danger, I would have, I mean, Leo is the obvious play, but the other ones that I was honestly worried about, and I'm guarantee you most people are going to say, what, was Percy and Annabeth, because they made it through Tartarus. They've done all of these amazing things together, and I wasn't sure where else their story could possibly go. Like, are they the two that get the happy ending and no big deal and everybody's happy, or are they the two who step up and say, someone has to die. We can't do this, and we're going to do it together because we are Percy and Annabeth. I was honestly most nervous for them throughout these books, because I was worried that in the end they would go together and do something crazy. And so when they were in the giant's clutches and Piper was standing there, I was honestly terrified because I really thought maybe that was the end for them. When they got out of that, I knew that they were going to be okay. But up until that point, I was nervous for them.
No, you know why? Because no one's going to buy a book about these characters if Percy and Annabeth aren't in it. So they're always going to be fine.
Pretty much.
Yeah. I was scared.
They're the money makers.
This is true.
I would totally read a Nico book without Percy. I would read it.
Yeah,
I
but
would too.
No one knows who Nico, like, you know what I mean? Percy Jackson is the branding of this entire series. So he was always going to be fine. And if he was going to be fine, Annabeth was going to be fine. But I understand where you're coming from. Like, it would have made sense story-wise, just not monetarily.
It would have raised the stakes, for sure.
Yeah.
It definitely would have been surprising. It would have taken everybody by surprise, for sure.
Well, they just spend so long talking about, like, oh, the big sacrifice. Oh, like, someone will never make it out. And, like, in every single time they meet one of the bad guy gods, they say, like, well, one of you's going to die. And you're like, if only that was true.
Hint, hint, nudge, nudge.
Yep.
Yeah,
Tumblr anyway. Would have exploded if Percy and Annabeth, if anything happened to them, it would not be Solangelo.
There would have been Hades to pay.
Very good.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's wrap this up with just a couple of quick things. First of all, if you guys haven't heard yet, Magnus Chase and the Gods of Asgard will be Riordan's new series at about Norse mythology, and book one is called The Sword of Summer. And apparently there's a clue in Blood of Olympus about Magnus and Annabeth's relation, because Annabeth's last name is Chase as well. And we have a comment from Hypeable reader Manda, who says, maybe it's when Piper's talking about family and Annabeth says she has an uncle and cousin that her dad doesn't like to talk about. So
that would make sense.
Yeah. Also, I read somewhere else. I believe this was on a Barnes & Noble interview thing, that Magnus is actually going to be an orphan and homeless. So that's interesting.
Are you guys reading this? Karen obviously is. Kristen, are you reading this?
I'll probably check out the first book to see if it catches my interest as much as the first Percy Jackson book did, then I'll probably read the whole series. But if the first book doesn't really grab me, then I might not.
Yeah, I don't know.
Karen's heart just broke, I'm sure, but I will probably read it because I'm a sucker and I get started with this character and I have to know. So
I'm
sure I'll end up reading it.
I think for me, honestly, like, if I had read these books when I was not stuck at an airport, I don't know if I would have kept going with them, but I was. And so that was something to do there. And they were very easy and very light reading. I don't know if I care enough about, like, the characters, or if I'm invested enough in this kind of formula that I want to read them, you know, a year apart. Like, I don't think I have that level of investment. Although I am interested to see what he would do with the Norse gods. But it's going to be, like, five books. It's going to be a prophecy. It's going to be, like, a group of them get together. Like, I know
trilogy.
How it's going to play out. Well, whatever. It's the same, like, formula. You know what I mean?
I know.
I feel like I know what's going to happen. I haven't even read them. Like, I didn't even know how many books there are, and I know what's going to happen. So That's true. Karen, you can report back. But for me, I think I need a little break from this this demigod formula for a little while. And maybe I'll come back and read them when they've all come out.
That's a good idea.
You could read them all in a day.
Yeah, you probably could.
I definitely could.
I definitely don't begrudge anybody who's like, yeah, I'm kind of done with this, because I think this formula is very repetitive. But like I said, if you're invested in the way that it plays out and you just really like the structure like I do, then it's fine. I'm hopelessly addicted to it. So yeah, I will be reading all of them and I will report back for you guys who are maybe on the fence about it. But
good luck, team.
He also has The Crown of Ptolemy coming out, which is the last crossover short story. It's going to have Sadie Kane, Carter Kane, Percy, and Annabeth, and it's going to be from Percy's point of view, which a lot of people are excited about because we haven't had that in a while, and I'm interested to see how that ends up playing out because the first two were pretty good. And then he also has Percy Jackson's Greek Heroes, which is the companion book to the Greek Gods book that's coming out. And the Greek Gods book is gorgeous. It's like a coffee table sized book, and it's got these huge, beautiful illustrations from the artist that does the other, like the Percy Jackson covers and everything. So I'm really excited to get my hands on Greek Heroes once that comes out.
I have a question for you, Karen.
Mm-hmm.
As far as the crossover books with the Sadie Kane character and that, if you haven't read the Egyptian series, the Kane Chronicles, does that come off as like, are you lost? Because I haven't read those, and I really would love to get another little dose of Percy and Annabeth, but I don't know anything about the other two characters. Like, do I need to have read the Kane Chronicles to make sense out of those?
I would suggest reading them, but I don't think it's necessary because he does sort of explain, because the way that they're like, they have magic and the way that that works is very different from the whole demigod universe. But he sort of explains that as he goes along, and it's definitely not necessary, I don't think. But and I mean, I didn't really like the Carter Kane the King Chronicles series as much as the Percy Jackson series. So if you don't feel like reading it, then I wouldn't say it's necessary.
I don't like these just crossovers. Curious. These bother me.
Really?
Yeah.
I think it's so cool.
The idea that the Greek-Roman one makes sense because they are like comparative mythologies, but I don't like the idea that they all exist. It doesn't make sense to me that they all exist together in the same world. Like the Greek-Roman one does, but the others, no, I don't like it. I just wish they were all separate ones. But I think that's probably the classic student in me, like taking umbrage with that.
Yeah. Okay, listener feedback. Kristen, why don't you take the first one?
Sure. Jonas says, I have read the book. I won't spoil anything, but I just want my feelings to be heard. So we agree. It's okay. After reading the book, it feels like Rick left me hanging. The book is awesome, but there's still more that I want to know. So I'm really hoping he will write another book about these series. Please, I'm begging. I'm pretty sure we all kind of agree. Yeah, I mean, especially for certain characters, there are things that we just wish we knew.
I'm pretty sure you're going to get your wish, Jonas, because no one's heard of the Kane Chronicles, and that's a reason that Magnus Chase is connected to this universe, and it's because this is the one people care about. So you'll get another book.
Okay, and then Ravenclaw 1991 says, not going to lie, finished that book shipping the Hades out of Nico and Will Solace. Though, if you've been on my Tumblr, you probably already knew that much. Nico's and Reyna's chapters were my favorites. I could go on and on about how good it was, but I'll just say my only real complaint. There was no reunion with Percy, Sally, and Paul. I wanted that so bad. And I kind of totally forgot about Sally, but now that you bring it up, I'm a little disappointed.
Yeah, especially with the whole focus on, like, family. That would have made a lot more sense. I guess we didn't it wasn't really a Percy-focused book, which I guess is why we didn't get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, Marima, you want to take the last one?
Shaw, Zed of the Twihard, says, "This was the first book I ever screamed and shouted and laughed at as I binge-read the last two-thirds of it within one afternoon. Oh, so great. Too perfect, in fact. Can something be too perfect? I don't think so. So glad I got a signed copy." Well, that's just rubbing it in. So thanks. I have to say, before we finish up, I forgot how funny these books were when I was reading them.
Yeah.
Like, I forgot, like, these are hysterically funny. And I think because I read them all so quickly, like, that's what the scene. Okay, in addition to the scene where they fight with the gods and Aphrodite's throwing down rose petals, like cheering Piper on, that's the best thing. But the other one that made me laugh so hard was when they go to the doctor guy and there's like the statue there and they're saying like, "I don't have health insurance. Like, I misfiled my form." I was crying with laughter. I can't even.
Oh my God.
So funny.
My favorite one was at one point when Leo's just like, "It broke his feels." And I was like, "Oh God, Rick."
Oh yeah.
You've been on Twitter and Tumblr too much. It was hilarious,
I just discovered the Kindle highlighting option, okay? And I bought both the Kindle. I had the Kindle book for this, but I bought the audiobook so that I could finish it in time, because otherwise I wouldn't have. And so I had, I kind of split my time between the two. Well, the things that I highlighted from this book that I had to make sure I could find again are all either points that made me laugh hysterically or things that made me cry. And one of my favorites is when the whole storm thing happened and Percy and Jason dive down and she tells them her name. Like, she's like, "I am Kim Poplia," or however you say her name. And Percy goes, "So yeah, we're gonna call you Kim."
Yeah.
I died. Oh, like, I just,
and then negotiating the like merchandise deal and everything. That was pretty great. I need to say, like, I have been quite negative in this episode. I understand that, but I actually really enjoy these books, but I enjoy them from like the fun side of it. I don't have any emotional involvement whatsoever with them, but they are very funny and like very fun, so that's why I have stuck with them, and that's why, you know, I read them all. That is very well done, and the way that he, like, it's just so funny. There's always just these gods and, you know, it's so archaic and everything, but he modernizes it. The language that he uses is really, really funny.
Agreed. Okay, so any last thoughts about the book before we go?
Stay tuned for when we review the next 5-part Percy Jackson series in about 2 years.
This is probably true. Well, thank you everyone for listening to our Blood of Olympus discussion. Hope you guys liked it. Please leave us comments, tweet at us, let us know what you thought of the book and what you thought of our discussion of it. Until next time, I'm Karen.
I'm Marima.
And I'm Kristen.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.